The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anika Gal from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the September 2017 Glamour magazine. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached at kiwanisfoundation.org. Well, welcome back, everyone. It is October 5th, and I do want to follow up with a few things that we have not gotten to yet in September. So Glamour was just chock full of really cool articles, so I wanted to share a few more with you. This one is entitled, You Have to Tell Yourself You Are Enough. Samira Wiley got a, quote, we regret to inform you, letter from every acting school she applied to. Then one audition helped her shake off the self-doubt, as told to Emily Mahaney. I first started thinking I wanted to act in third grade after I saw a girl recite Nikki Giovanni's Ego Tripping at my school's oratorical contest. She transformed the text into a story. I thought, I'm going to do that next year. I started going to musical theater camps at 10 and got accepted into a performing arts high school. Junior year, I taught myself The Clock Struck 9 from Romeo and Juliet and won a Shakespeare contest. I decided to study acting intensively, so I applied to at least 5 big conservatory-style programs, such as New York City. I felt tense but confident going into my auditions. I did the Juliet monologue and one from Fences, and I felt optimistic. Then the rejections started rolling in. The envelopes were all so thin that after a while I didn't even have to see the words, we regret to inform you, on the letters inside. I would just immediately know. I got rejected by every theater school I applied to that year, forcing me to face what I assumed was my reality. Samira, you're not good enough to be on the stage. My new plan was to go to Temple University, a liberal arts school I had applied to as a backup, and eventually get a job behind the scenes as, say, a casting director to stay close to what I loved. First semester, though, I took an acting class with a notoriously tough teacher that changed everything. I thought she didn't like me, until one day she pulled me aside and said, it might benefit you to audition for a more intensive conservatory. I was like, oh no, she's got it wrong. I set her straight. I'm happy here. I applied to all these schools and didn't get in. They were right. I'm not a good actor. I have tried almost every school except Juilliard. And she goes, audition for Juilliard. I thought she was crazy, but I couldn't get her words out of my head. I finally told myself, I'll audition, but no part of me, even the slightest, thought I would get in. My audition for Juilliard felt different than prior ones. When I did the Juliet monologue, my body relaxed in a way it hadn't before. Then the judges asked me to sing. I grew up singing at church and felt more confident back then singing than acting. I sang the Star Spangled Banner. Still, I knew my name wouldn't be on the callback list, so I hung back when it got taped up. People were saying, oh my God, there's only 3 names. I'll never forget walking up to the list, scanning it, and seeing W-W-I-L-E-Y. I did my callback for before 25 to 30 faculty members. Out of the 1,500, they would select only 18. And a few weeks later, I got the call. We would like to have you. Would you like to join us? I said, uh-huh. Flew out of my room and ran down the dorm floor, knocking on every door. Bang, bang, bang. Friends came into the hall like, she got in. Juilliard gave me confidence in a way that I had never had before. Teachers told us, you were the people we picked. We want you here for a reason. That affirmation was powerful. In retrospect, I'd tell 18-year-old Samira, opinion isn't truth. Keep on. Be patient. Someone once told me success is all about the right role, right person, right project, right time. I've been blessed with that in Pussy, in Orange is the New Black, and Moira in The Handmaid's Tale. I do feel worthy of these roles. There are, of course, times I revert a bit. When I see people I admire at auditions, I'll question myself. I'm working alongside Elizabeth Moss now, but one time I signed into an audition for another project, saw her name, and thought, Elizabeth Moss is here. Why am I here? Combating that insecurity is an everyday journey. You have to tell yourself you're enough. No, Samira, we did this already, remember? We found out you're worthy. Stop. You are worthy. I hope we all, as women, get to a point where we don't need reminding, where we just know, I am worthy. I am big enough for the opportunities that come my way. And our next article is entitled, Be Your Whole Self. Bazoma St. John has a hard-earned nickname, Badass Boz. A new job helping remake Uber, and excellent career advice. And this is by Amy Dubois Barnett. The enormous crystal chandelier that hangs in the foyer of Bazoma St. John's Los Angeles home gives a dramatic first impression, but it's no less dramatic than the homeowner herself. Almost 6 feet tall, in bare feet, and wearing her signature bright prints with matching fuchsia lip gloss, St. John is every bit as striking giving a tour of her new home as she was on stage being honored as Executive of the Year at Billboard's 2016 Women in Music Awards last winter. When asked about her hot pink curtains in her master bedroom, St. John, 40, a woman whose resume name checks her tenure at some of the world's biggest brands, explains her reasoning. I've worked hard for my life, she says. No one gave me anything. This house is a reflection of that. It belongs to me and to my daughter, Lael, so I can make it as feminine and bold as I am, because I can. St. John's new role as chief brand officer for Uber makes her a unicorn in Silicon Valley. She's one of the very few black, female, C-suite executives in tech. But to earn her place in the pantheon, St. John has overcome challenges that would have stymied most mortals. When St. John was 5 years old, a coup d'etat forced her family to flee their native Ghana and seek political asylum in the States. They ultimately settled in Colorado Springs, and St. John developed an encyclopedic knowledge of all things pop culture to make friends. Landing a job with Spike Lee's advertising agency after graduating from Wesleyan University, where, as an undergrad, she taught a course on Tupac Shakur, she went on to develop a relationship with Beyoncé that eventually resulted in St. John initiating a complex $50 million deal for Pepsi to sponsor the singer's 2013 tour and the 2013 Super Bowl halftime show. But St. John's professional triumph was accompanied by personal tragedy. Her husband died of cancer that same year. Needing a change, she jumped to headphone company Beats. Shortly thereafter, Apple acquired Beats, and St. John became the head of global consumer marketing for Apple Music and iTunes. Now she's on to beleaguered superbrand Uber. I caught up with her 1 week into the job at Uber's Santa Monica office to talk about her inspirations and outlook for the future. Glamour. Your larger-than-life persona projects authenticity and confidence. Most people try to blend into their environment. Were you always this comfortable in your own skin? Bazoma St. John. When we moved to Colorado, there was nothing I could do about the color of my skin, my hair, or my height. Embracing my differences was important to my mother. We spoke our native tongue and ate native foods. It didn't matter if on Friday nights I had 15-year-old friends over for a slumber party. She was not serving pizza. You're going to eat pepper soup and like it. Those were good lessons about accepting your full self. And being the authentic me always got me attention. Sometimes too much attention makes you a target, but you take the hits and push forward. Glamour. How do you make tough career decisions and know when to make a move? BSJ. I've never taken the easy route. You have to think about what you're trying to achieve and then make the move. I always make decisions from my gut and follow the path that's right for me. Glamour. After you accepted the Uber position, attorney Eric Holder released a scathing report on the company's leadership and culture. A board member resigned for making sexist remarks about women to Arianna Huffington, and CEO Travis Kalanick resigned. Did you have any regrets about taking the job after you heard the news? BSJ. I did my research to understand the brand potential and what I was going to do, or what I was going into. All the things I discovered were okay for me, and I knew I could make a difference. There's no more exciting moment for me as a brand strategist than a turnaround. Glamour. Did you speak with women at Uber about the needs, about what needs to change? BSJ. I talk to a lot of people. I want to impact the environment for the women working here and for myself. We want to make sure women feel empowered, safe, and excited about their work. And being a change agent means being fearless. Uber will never be the same after I leave. Glamour. How have you dealt with sexual harassment issues in your own career? BSJ. There have been times when I felt someone was unclear about the intention of a dinner or a drink. We often find ourselves talking business in social situations with a male colleague, and that person wants to take it someplace else. We all know networking will help us move ahead, but being firm and clear about the no and my intention has helped me. Glamour. As a black woman, what are some of the challenges you faced? Have you been mistaken for the help, like Melody Hobson, the African-American president of Ariel Investments, who said she was presumed to be a kitchen worker at a business lunch? BSJ. I thought all black girls had that, no? It happens in the airport constantly. Every time I board business class, it's like, oh, are you sitting in the right seat? I make sure to keep my boarding pass out just in case somebody has a question. Glamour. Speaking of challenges, how did your husband Peter's death impact your mindset and career choices? BSJ. We were married for 10 years. When he became ill, we had just finished Beyoncé's Super Bowl. 6 months later, he was dead. My whole life crumbled. Our daughter was 4 at the time. At the end, Peter made me promise I wouldn't stop hustling. It was a beautiful gift because it gave me permission to keep going. You've got to make the big bets and live every single moment of it. Who cares if it scares you? What is life except risk? Because we don't know if tomorrow is promised. Glamour. You're an advocate for women. How important is your circle of friends? BSJ. I love that meme. Behind every successful woman, there's a group text hyping her up. Well, my group text is full of badass broads cheering me along. Glamour. And what advice do you have for women struggling to find her voice? For a woman struggling to find her voice? BSJ. Be your whole self. If there's an opportunity to share an idea or hell, even to dress up for the office. Be your whole self. That's the example I'm living for my daughter and other women. Being everything I am. That's magical, and I want everyone to see it. Amy Dubois Barnett is the former editor-in-chief of Ebony Magazine. Our next article is from the Life section of the Glamour magazine, and it says, wait, maybe true love does exist. Just hear us out. We have proof, by Maggie Mertens. And there is a picture of Tia and Derek in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. He's my ride or die, she says, and they are hiking by a beautiful lake with the mountains in the background. It's easy to be cynical about love. We live in the age of prioritizing careers over partners and going on dates for the Instagram pics instead of the conversation. How important can love be? After all, Rihanna seems to get along fine without it. But before you write off romance as a superfluous trifle or a holdover from the days of white picket fence ideals, we'd like to remind you that it can still, on occasion, blow your mind. Cases in point? These three couples who have faced the real tough stuff, from a devastating diagnosis and cultural barriers to the after effects of war, and are still in it together. Their experiences show that sometimes love has nothing to do with bouquets of roses or candlelit date nights. It's more like steel. Throw it in the fire, and it just gets stronger. Quote, he wants me to see the world before I lose my eyesight, end quote. And that is from Tia Brown, 27, and Derek Brown, 26. When I first saw Derek, my co-worker at the time, I was smitten, and I hadn't even had a conversation with him yet, says Tia. Derek, however, acted totally uninterested. But after 1 year and two business trips, they started dating, and things got serious fast. That's why, after just 1 month together, Tia knew she had to reveal something that might end the relationship altogether. I was so scared to tell him, she recalls, but I really cared for him, so I wanted to be upfront. Her secret? She has retinitis pigmentosa, a rare eye disease that causes blindness, in her case, probably before she turns 40. My mom warned me not to tell people because it could scare them off, says Tia. I thought he would break up with me. Who would agree to this? But her honesty had the opposite effect. I was impressed with how brave she was in making herself so vulnerable and coming to terms with her disease, says Derek. Married now, the couple has already dealt with Tia's deteriorating vision. It's a hard reality to cope with, she says. I have no night vision. Derek has to guide me down the stairs and help me find things that are right in front of me. It's been a process for both of them. Early on, I wasn't very sensitive, Derek says. I'd ask Tia to pass something at a restaurant, which made her embarrassed when she couldn't see it. I've learned not to create those types of situations. And preparing for the inevitable obstacles ahead means they're living life now. I want to see as much of the world as possible while I can, says Tia. So far, they've visited most of the U.S. and its national parks, camping or hiking with their dogs. Paris is next, and elephant sanctuaries in Thailand are on her bucket list. It's not something I'd have done myself, says Derek, but knowing how important it is to her, I'm fully on board. Seeing everything with her makes me appreciate being able to see and take in all the beauty in the world. We can't visit our families together. Hina Shahid, 36, and Vijay Chatravarthi, 34. Hina moved to the U.S. 9 years ago to study and to break free from cultural expectations in her native Pakistan. So when Vijay, an Indian-born fellow graduate student at Savannah College of Arts and Design in Georgia, asked her out, she hesitated. "I want to be independent and date different boys," she remembers. But the more she got to know Vijay, the more she saw he was different. "Generally, I had to downplay my ambition to not scare men away," she says. "Not with him." As the relationship grew, there came a new obstacle: how to stay together after they graduated and their student visas expired. "He couldn't live in Pakistan, and same for me in India," says Hina. "Getting visas, even to visit between our countries, is almost impossible because they've been in conflict for so long." Determined to stay in the U.S., they looked for any jobs they could find in order to get work visas, which meant several years of relocating to four states, winnowing down their possessions to two suitcases each to move more easily, and dating long distance. Their motto: survive and survive together. Finally, they both found jobs in New Jersey, got married, bought a house, and applied for permanent residency. "Still, our challenges aren't over," says Hina. She hasn't been home to visit her family in Pakistan since she left, and until they hear about their green card application, "we're scared to step out of the country," says Vijay. "She may not be allowed back in. She's Muslim from Pakistan. And there's the looming worst case: our application doesn't go through, which would put everything in jeopardy." Now, expecting their first child, they're figuring it out as they go. "There are obstacles," Hina says, "but choosing to not be together was never an option." And finally, "we met when love was the last thing on his mind." Sandra Magura, 37, and Josh Magura, 36. In 2006, Sandra was driving the support vehicle for the Soldier Ride bicycle race when Josh, an Army vet, asked to ride with her. He said the place where his leg had recently been amputated was hurting, says Sandra. They rode in the car, going 5 miles per hour, and talked for 10 straight hours. "We just clicked," she says. For both, the connection was unexpected. He was still recovering from the surgery in Washington, D.C., and Sandra was in New York, just out of a serious relationship. "I wasn't looking for someone," says Josh, "but I wanted to spend as much time with her as possible." Today they're married and raising two children in Virginia. Friends ask if it's hard to be with an amputee, "but it doesn't affect me," says Sandra. "You could be married for years and your partner could lose a limb. I met Josh after his accident, when most people start to give up on love because they're disabled. But it's the only way I know him, and together we're the best team." All right, so here's some beauty advice from Dakota Johnson, the wildly relatable actress in face of Gucci Bloom. "I'm complicated, but my beauty routine is simple. My no-frills skincare routine. I'm a sucker for pretty packaging, so I buy a bunch of products but end up not using any of them. I just like the way they look. I truly have the simplest routine. I wash my face in the morning and at night, then moisturize. During the day, I add sunscreen. Right now, I'm into Lancer products. My minimal makeup MO? I don't really wear makeup if I don't have to. When I'm going out somewhere, I'll use a little concealer, lip color, and mascara. My bright eye beauty hack? Hello, I'm Dakota, and I'm addicted to eye drops. The last time I used was 20 minutes ago. Really, I'm addicted to eye drops. I just love the feeling of them in my eyes. It's glorious. My grandmother's mascara trick. She, actress Tippi Hedren, was watching me put my mascara on once and told me that if you hold the mirror down low and put the mascara on while looking downward, you will get the most coverage from the base of the lashes to the tips. And of course, she's right. She's a movie star. She's a legend. My intentional perfume trail? I've always worn fragrance because I love to leave a scent behind. I love that perfume can take you back to someplace immediately. I prefer floral scents to ones that are musky. Right now I'm wearing Gucci Bloom. It's very floral, so I love it. My mother, Melanie Griffith, has worn the same perfume my entire life, and that's very comforting to me. My body confidence moment? For my role as Susie, a ballet dancer in Suspiria, out later this year, I trained for about 6 months with the brilliant Belgian-French choreographer Damien Jallet. I actually danced until I was about 16 with a company in L.A., so it was great to work that muscle again. I rehearsed 6 or 8 hours a day leading up to the shoot, then continued with 2 hours of rehearsals while shooting. It was truly the most wild experience. I learned that if I work my ass off, I'm capable of doing all sorts of things with my body. My beauty regrets? There are a few tattoos I wish weren't on my body. But it happens, I guess, and admittedly, I continue to get them. I also was feeling a bit sassy this morning and cut my bangs in a whirlwind after 6 months of growing them out. So, I hope I don't regret that. All right, I'm going to leave you with a how to cook a chicken breast that doesn't suck recipe. You will amaze everyone you know with this one. 1 boneless, skinless chicken breast, 3 to 4 ounces, salt and pepper, 1 tablespoon extra virgin olive oil, fresh chopped herbs are optional, lemon optional. Boneless, skinless chicken breasts are inconveniently shaped, thick at the top and tapering off at the bottom, so it's hard to cook them thoroughly without drying out the thin part. We use a meat pounder or a rolling pin to pound the breast so it's an even thickness. Cover it with plastic wrap or wax paper first. Season both sides with salt and pepper. Preheat oven to 375 degrees Fahrenheit. Heat oil in an oven-proof frying pan over medium-high. Cook breast for 2 minutes on one side without disturbing it. This helps form a crust, which helps keep the inside juicy. Then flip it and cook under undisturbed for another 2 minutes. Move chicken into oven. Cook for 3 to 4 minutes, then flip and cook another 3 to 4 minutes. Top with a squeeze of lemon and herbs if desired. Serves 1. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you have enjoyed it. I'm Anika Gal, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleradioreadingservice.org. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached by kiwanisfoundation.org. So long, until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Have a great week.